the argument that I've heard from supporters of this legislation is that they deserve a say, that they deserve a say in how these emergency orders are conducted, because they don't like the way in which the governor has tried to lead us through this pandemic. They say that through them, they know better. These same individuals, many of whom I'm looking at right now, can't even listen to the CDC, which says wearing a mask would limit how long this pandemic would go on. And yet they deserve a say? We can't trust you with a say, because you don't follow basic facts. You don't follow basic science. And so I don't trust people who can't wear a mask to, in a pandemic, to have a say on when it's happening.
Malcolm Kenyatta. Hey, everybody. It is Friday, January 29th, 2021. Welcome to Raging Chicken's Out the Coop Podcast. Yeah, it's a normal Friday again, everybody. This is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken. Each week, I talk to our unemployed Trump staffer, Sean Kitchen, about the good, the bad, and the ugly in state and national politics. Yes, that was Malcolm Kenyatta, everybody, today. Once again, tearing it up on the floor out in Harrisburg. On today's show, man, there's so much going on. There's so much to get to, but you know, both Sean and I have some hard outs today, so we're gonna focus a little bit. Quite as free-willing today, but we'll try to get to what we can. But it was a huge week. Biden signed significant executive actions on climate change and restoring Obamacare. His climate action calls for converting all the federal vehicle pool to all electric vehicles. And the government has to now take into account all the climate costs before it's approving any federal permits. All right, these are just actions that he can take. This is not even getting to the actual legislation stuff. So actually really good moves. And this week, Wall Street hedge funds feel the pitchforks as Reddit-fueled retail traders take revenge. Think about the big GameStop story as the revenge for what those very same hedge funds did to Toys R Us. Taking our childhood away, we're going to show you. Gotta say, it's fun to see Eat the Rich trending. It's pretty crazy. And the GameStop controversy has done more to bring left and right politicians together than any initiative in the Biden's Unity administration. Yep, and that's after the trading platform Robinhood screwed out all the retail traders to protect hedge fund billionaires. Right, this was the platform that had the reputation of being like the nice Wall Street people, the hipsters. Right, there you go. Hey, but AOC said, wait, not so fast, Ted Cruz. Nope, you are not wanted as part of this coalition, and you should resign, by the way. Right, why? Well, you know, you tried to have me killed. So, no, goodbye. According to new reporting in The Guardian, it looks like most of the world's poorest countries will not be vaccinated against COVID-19 until well into 2024. Yeah, that bodes well. Some may never reach the necessary vaccination levels to achieve the herd immunity. Nothing like adding yet another crisis on the back of the most vulnerable regions. And I guess fomenting global uprisings are going to be a thing of this decade. You thought it what was bad, what you saw with GameStop. Look out. New York's Governor Cuomo allegedly proposed purposely underreported nursing home deaths by as much as 50%. If you remember, if you were listening carefully to some of our reporting back, some of our discussions back there, this is something that we had our eye on before, because Cuomo was doing weird stuff with what he was doing in the nursing homes. Iowa lawmakers are on the verge of eliminating tenure at all Iowa State universities. It would be the first university or first legislature in the country that would move to do this, but if it goes through, I guarantee you will not be the last. And those hedge fund babies are going to cry some more tears when they hear that Sweden has put a ban on mink breeding. Yep, due to the corona spread of a COVID-19 variant through the country's mink population. No fur coat for you. And QAnon Republican Representative Marjorie Taylor Greene just gets crazier by the day. Not only did she call, she's famous for this, call the Parkland shooting a false flag operation, turns out newly revealed posts that show her applauding calls, you know, to assassinate Democratic congressional leaders, including Nancy Pelosi. Just an everyday Republican. A little closer to home, PA Republicans make headlines in the New York Times once again. An article dropped yesterday about why Pennsylvania Republican leaders are doubling down on their Trump credentials. It's always great to get national attention here in Pennsylvania, don't you think? It's like, yeah, you know, Sean and I were talking about this before the show, and it's like, you know, it's good that the nation is starting to kind of finally realize how freaking crazy it is here in Pennsylvania, like we've been saying for a long time. And Pennsylvania has a Jeffrey Yass problem. PA Spotlight published an op-ed in the Penn Capital Star about the billionaire hedge funder Jeffrey Yass and his connections to the education privatization movement and how he has used Commonwealth Foundation-associated PACs to fund Pennsylvania's leading insurrectionists. And you'll recognize this discussion and exactly this connections from some of our discussions here, right here on Out the Coup Podcast. And WITF, Harrisburg's NPR affiliate, has made the editorial decision to mention how key Republicans played a role in the insurrection by signing onto letters to overturn the 2020 election results whenever they report on those Republicans from here on out. So, for example, any of those, if WITF is reporting on some of those Republicans that signed on to that letter in support of the insurrection, WITF will now include this. Senator, fill in the blank, who signed a letter asking members of Congress to delay certifying Pennsylvania's electoral votes despite no evidence that would call those results into question, today introduced a bill that blah, 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 right? That is going to be tagged to them in all the reporting. That's freaking awesome. Sorry, a little tickle. And a 30-year-old bartender in Montgomery County has tested positive for the UK variant of the coronavirus. And that's the one of the variants that spreads a lot more easily and more quickly than the original strain. And it turns out that the South African variant, which is a little bit more resistant and a little bit more of concern, it's gone a little bit under the radar, is now also starting to show up in the States. It showed up, I think it was South Carolina, where it showed up in both these cases, by the way, the bartender and the South Carolinian. They had no travel history, which means it's already spreading in the community, and these folks are picking up from there. And today's last call, Axiom Space. Yes, that is a thing. Axiom Space announced that it will fly the first ever crew of tourists to the International Space Station in early 2022. Yes, three of the globe's super rich will pay $71 million for the trip each. That's each for the trip. And they get to spend a full 8 days on the space station. You got to wonder if they're going to bring their own servants, too, you know, because I can't imagine if you're an astronaut in the space station who's doing all the science stuff that you're really going to want to have the freaking bunch of, you know, billionaires kind of hanging around wondering kind of where the snacks are and when happy hour is. I want to remind you to tune into the Rick Smith Show on Free Speech TV this and every Saturday at 7 p.m. Eastern. You can stream the show live at freespeech.org. You can also tune in on the Dish Network, DirecTV, or through the Free Speech TV app on Roku. And make sure to subscribe to Rick's daily podcast on iTunes, Podbean, or wherever you get your podcasts. He's everywhere, right? And, you know, by the way, you can also watch his stream every night, right? So he broadcasts live, right? But you can watch his stream on Facebook, on Twitter. He's got it going everywhere. On YouTube, it's all over the place, right? And, you know, again, like I always say, you know, everything I learned about Pennsylvania politics, I learned from Rick. I mean, again, Rick, you know, he's not focused only on Pennsylvania politics, right? He does mostly national stuff, all this kind of, but I'll tell you, man, the guy's great. So check him out. Monday's out to Coop Live. I got a couple things in the works. Hasn't been quite settled yet. Some scheduling issues that are going in, trying to work some times out. But if we can't nail it down for next week, so I don't even want to kind of tell you what we've got. I've got a couple things in kind of in the mix, people that we might have on. I might do a sound show on Monday if we don't hear, because there's been some great sound this week. But check out our social media, our Facebook page and everything like this and our Twitter, and I'll kind of keep you alerted what we're doing for Monday. But that Out the Coop Live, normally Mondays at 7 p.m., we might switch around the time a little bit. And by the way, I did just a random Out to Coop Live. What is it? God, Sunday night, you know, last night, two nights ago, I think. Wednesday night, I think. Yeah. And just kind of like, I needed to do some work, and I just thought, what the hell? I'm just going to throw a stream up. I had a really good conversation with this guy down in Texas. Just about kind of what's happening down there. Just kind of stream of consciousness, just kind of, you know, folks getting together and kind of having a conversation late at night and out to Goop Live. And so I might be doing some more of those, because it was actually just nice just to kind of hang out and, you know, some chat with some folks about what was going on in their neck of the woods. And I want to give you a special thanks to our newest patron, Ben. Yes, Ben became our newest patron at the $25 a month level. Yes, thank you, Ben. Boom! He now joins the rank of all you raging chickens out there, right? The chicken coop grows. If you want a progressive future, you know, be like Ben, because, man, we need progressive media. You can help support Pull No Punches homegrown progressive media today. Become a patron of Raging Chicken for as little as $5 a month if you go to patreon.com/rcpress and choose your membership level or your patron level, however you want to talk about it. Times like these, man, do we need to invest in our progressive media infrastructure? Help keep the media in the movement and the movement in the media. We're in the fight for our future. We're in for that fight, and we need you. Become a patron for as little as $5 a month by going to patreon.com/rcpress. If you're still on the fence, you're not ready to quite become a patron, right? Just go over to paypal.me/rcpress. paypal.me/rcpress, and you can hit up our tip jar, drop us any amount from $5 to $10, $100. Throw it in there, right? We definitely can use it. And I want to remind you, for those folks that are, hello to those folks that are watching us right now on our YouTube stream. We are now broadcasting our Out to Coop podcast, our regular Friday show on YouTube. So if you want to kind of join the live show, head on over there anytime we're live. And when you're over there, make sure that you hit that subscribe button. Make sure that you hit the little bell for that notification. So every time we go live, you're alerted to it. You don't miss a show, right? What's great about our live stream, right? We get to hear some comments from folks that are kind of tuning in, hear some from different perspectives from around the country and from our listener base. But the best thing that you can do, I'm telling you, let everybody know right now, send them out, kind of let them know that this is live right now, tweet out our tweets, let them know that they can head over to our YouTube page and watch us live right now, and make sure that you're subscribing and hit that notification bell, let us know there. And hey, say hello, right? We'd love to know you're there. All right, well, hey, man, Sean, I thought you had gone dark there for a bit, but welcome back.
2 minutes.
Yeah, and I
thank you.
Yeah, can I just say, is that a carpet I see back there?
Yes, it is. That is a carpet.
I didn't notice that when we were talking before the show, but now I'm looking at it now. Like,
I've had this for a few months.
Have you really? I don't know. I guess the angle that you were at before or something like that. I thought, you know, you were still dealing with the bare floors until you found exactly the right thing that was going to go with your new.
It ties the room together.
I absolutely agree. I absolutely agree. And by the way, you know, before we kind of jump into the show today, I saw that you're out there plugging like fleets so you can kind of make sure that your fashion line is getting the attention that it needs.
Nah, I have not. I don't get the use of fleets. Yeah. I have not used them yet. I they're just a nuisance in my opinion. I was just wondering if anyone uses fleets. But yeah, so
I mean, it's like whatever.
I still got the Amazon boxes behind me for the past few weeks.
Hey, good. It's always, you know, you want to show your kind of anti-union credentials anytime you can. That's great. Just kidding.
Oh, trust me, I'm not conflicted because I've been using Instacart for the past several months, and I'm like conflicted because, you know, I don't have a car, and, you know, I use Instacart just because I can't make it to the supermarket and really can't get all the goods I need at the the Broad Street Market.
Yep.
Like, there's actual things, and so yeah, no, it sucks that we're, you know, forced to deal with these monopolies and these hedge funds and stuff like that.
No, but you know,
these billionaires.
Yeah, no, but look, you know, this is the kind of thing, and like, you know, again, obviously, anytime we get
I tip the workers really well with Instacart and stuff like that, like, so.
Absolutely, and I think, you know, that and one of the key things here is to, you know, again, like you said, we're forced into the situation, right? And kind of in many ways. I mean, you know, obviously we should all go out of our ways whenever we can, right, to not support these companies. But like, I mean, look, it's a fact of our lives. I mean, there's no way around it. And I'm always reminded of this this conversation we had after these big IMF and World Bank protests down in Washington, D.C. This is way back in 2000. And we had a kind of debriefing, right, after the whole protest and I was teaching at George Washington University at the time, and I worked with these amazing student activists, right? And you know, organizing had been going on for months. And there was this kind of debriefing, and there was this one guy, Bernie. I'm still friends with Bernie, and he's like, his name is Bernie, you know. But he's, you know, he got up, he started talking about when he started getting more and more politicized, and so what actions you can take against these global behemoths, right? Particularly in the kind of fight against, say, sweatshop labor and stuff. And he sat there, and he was like, you know, so I really wanted to find, yeah, I needed a new pair of sneakers, and so I wanted to go and find a pair of sneakers that wasn't made in sweatshops. And he's like, you know, so I spent like, you know, like the best part of a day, probably about 10 hours trying to go around from place to place, right? Trying to locate somebody that had these, you know, these shops. And he's like, and I finally found him, and he kind of shows him. And he's like, he said, but, you know, I got to thinking after that. He said, I just spent 10 hours of my day, right, for one consumer choice. Right. So that I could feel better about wearing non-sweatshop labor. He's like, you know, he's like, I get it. And I want to buy those when I can. But you know what? I'd rather spend at least 9 out of 10 of those hours organizing to stop sweatshop labor as a whole. And that made a whole lot of sense. Right. You know, the whole idea is like, you know, OK, look, we're stuck with these people. So all the more reason to actually support those workers that are organizing a union right now, kind of down in Alabama, I believe. Right. With Amazon. Right. Organizing and helping support the Instacart drivers. Right. That are kind of just trying to make a buck but are getting screwed out. Right. Especially out in California, where they kind of after Prop 22 passed, they, you know, kind of fired all the unionized employees. Right. So here you go. Right. So more time to organize, more time to unionize and support those workers. Right. And do whatever we can. And yes, support local businesses when we can and so on. But we got to recognize we can't make turn this into a shame fest where we all recognize that we are in a kind of a bind when it comes to this, especially kind of people that don't have ready access down the street to everything that they would need. So,
yeah.
Anyways, that's my promo code, I guess.
Thank you for not shaming me over this. Well, no, I also like, you know, like I take the extra efforts. I've have been doing this for a while, also supporting local businesses. I mean, like we have an awesome farmers market right here in Harrisburg. You know, it has just enough to get your produce and to get your meats and stuff like that. But, you know, whenever I go out, I usually go out of my way to support the local butcher there. And get to know them. You know, obviously we might not be aligned politically, but you get to develop those relationships with these people on a personal basis over like 6 or 7 years. Like, you know, like when I was home last week, talking about this last week, like, you know, I was like, wow, like my family and I have been going to Rikers in the far northeast, like in Fox Chase, or the Danish Bakers up there in like Fox Chase and Rockledge for like 30 years now.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, there are stores that we've been going to like for 30 or 40 years, which has been pretty interesting just like thinking about that at this point. Like, you know, so I try to support the local businesses whenever I can. And, you know, I guess fuck the bankers and fuck the hedge funders.
Yeah, dude. So let's get right into this. Right. So I have been unable to take myself away from the GameStop story. I mean, I'm telling you I've just been like, this is crazy. I mean, and part of me, I can't quite place it because, like, you know, I mean, I just love the freaking chaos that's being created, right? I mean, I think it's like, you see what these people are doing and you're, you know, the fact that you've got people, I mean, TikTok right now is insane with this stuff, right? Some of the memes, some of the posts out there, like, you know, the fact that like eat the rich is trending and stuff like this and, you know, this explosion and then watching the kind of like hedge fund baby tears on CNBC going like, where's the government when you need them? Where's the regulation? Where are they? Right. It's a thing.
I mean, this
beauty.
Is also like the perfect time. This is the perfect time to push for a billionaire tax, to push for the wealth tax.
Well, that's what Elizabeth Warren called for, right? Right. Off the bat.
Like the push for a Robin Hood tax of taxing stock transactions. Like with, you know, this has been ideas that have been talked, especially the Robin Hood tax have been talked about since Occupy Wall Street.
Yep.
One of the policies of taxing, you know, putting a micro tax on every financial transaction. Like, I mean, like, fuck these people. It's time to start taking their wealth and, you know, taking it from them. I mean, like, it's been fun. Have you been watching the Discord chats, like videos of the Discord chats, like of them like screaming, buy, 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 buy. And people are like, oh, my God.
Reddit, I followed like Wall Street Bets on Reddit and kind of like watched some of that. And it's crazy.
No, but it's always so funny, like, hearing people say, like, this is what it used to sound like on the stock trading floor before COVID and all that stuff, when, you know, everyone used to be, like, on the floors yelling. Like, this is exactly the mentality.
This is not like Jim Cramer's, like, you know, CNBC channel, right? I mean, this is like him going, bye, bye, I'm telling you, bye. I mean, this is the same shit.
And Cramer, I think Cramer came out defending these people. He's like, well, what's the difference between, like, the short squeeze happening here at these people and, you know, like, Wall Street traders doing this every day on the floor.
That's exactly right. Exactly. Yeah. Right.
So, I mean, I love the I love the memes with Leonardo DiCaprio from Wolf of Wall Street. I'm not going anywhere. I ain't fucking going.
Like, to the moon, to the moon. I've been like, they just say, man, these people are just
People are like, hold the line was trending yesterday on Twitter. Like,
yeah, no, exactly. Like,
I actually
had a friend, yep.
One of my friends from the Young Democrats that I met posted, he's like, yo, I bought in on the GameStops at like $85 a share. Like,
no, exactly.
I mean, like, but also you think about the stories, like, fuck, I wish I would have put like $1,000 down on this. Like, you know what I mean? Like, yep. Imagine if you put $1,000 on GameStop before it spiked and, you know, pulled out at $250 a share. Like,
Yep, absolutely.
Like, I mean, this is what, like, libertarians love. This is what they talk about. Like, well, this is exact.
Well,
like,
this is the fascinating thing, right? What's fascinating about, and this, you know, okay, so there's like different levels. Like, one, I just
okay. This is one shows you that the stock market is just a fraud.
It's a fraud, total fraud.
Like,
right?
You know, 100%. Dow Jones is at 30,000 points right now, and the rest of the working America is like living through one of the worst pandemics, one of the worst recessions, depressions in like 100 years.
Yep.
So like, the stock market does not really indicate the wealth or the actual wealth of the economy.
No, absolutely.
It just means rich people are getting richer.
That's all it means. That's all it means. Yeah. Right. Well, but it means like this. No, really what, you know, again, you've got these different levels, right? And this is, you know, I'm going to butcher the guy's name, but I'm thinking, you know, this guy runs this venture capitalist firm, right? It's called Social Capital. He was like a former, I think, Facebook dude or something like this. Is it Indian guy? I wish I'll see if I can come up with his name in a minute, but he's like, he was on CNBC basically saying, you know, pushing back against these people, right? Because he's just basically, he's been on Twitter and stuff like that. He's just like, what did you fucking expect? I mean, it's like, that's the language that he's using. He's like, I don't know what you fucking expected. He's like, you guys have been doing this. He's like, it's been clear what's going on. And when somebody else, when everyday people are picking up and doing this, what the fuck did you expect? Right. And he's been on CNBC basically, you know, brought on, and you got the, you know, the announcers saying, well, you know, this is the kind of thing that this, you know, market manipulation and things like this. And he's like, what do you think hedge funds are? He said, what do you think? Why did you think they brought in all these quants, and they have all these quants based like trading programs and algorithms that they're using in order to kind of do micro trading? He's like, that's what they're doing. He says they are all momentum based hedge funds, right? Where they kind of like work on and buy when things are going and selling when it goes on. And they're able to kind of have a degree of influence on the ups and downs of the market. It's like, that's what those things are. And those, the people on Reddit, right? The Wall Street Bets people. And again, it wasn't just them, but it's like, they figured that out, right? They figured out what was going on is that you got these hedge funds that were kind of like going way in, right? On the kind of like shorting GameStop. And they knew, you know, the result of that is to kind of cause the price to fall. So it wasn't just like, you know, say, hey, you know what? I'm going to take a bet that GameStop's going to go down, right? As like, you know, they like to talk about it. I'm going to little think about it. You know, based upon all the information that I have and my best study and research, I think GameStop's going to go down, so I'm going to short it. No. They put all this money into it, which drives down the market, right? Because then that's what the deal is, right? And so, you know, these folks basically saw that going on. And they're like, I mean, you took our Toys R Us, you're not taking our GameStop, fuck you.
But this is also like indicative, like, this is what happens to our media infrastructure in this country. Uh-huh. Hedge funds or venture capitalists end up buying newspapers, betting against them and driving them into the fucking ground. And now we don't have a media infrastructure in this country. Like, I think that's one of the most blatant examples of like what hedge funds have destroyed this country and this society. And no, it's about time, like, you know, fucking grab the pitchforks. I mean, I wonder, like, what the person, like, the shit poster or, like, the Reddit person who, like, I have an idea. We can do this ourselves. Like, I wonder, like, how that, well, like, no, conversation but that,
it's
evolved,
actually been,
like,
what's interesting, if you follow some of these, that's why I've been fascinated by this story, right? If you follow some of these people, right, you know, they've been putting out their explanations, like, on TikTok, like, on Reddit, right? You see in different kind of social media channels. You talk to some of them. Look, the reason why GameStop really kind of set a lot of these folks up, because they had been talking about GameStop for a while now. Right, this wasn't something that they just decided at the last drop of a minute to spontaneous, because there really was a disagreement. Right, there was a guy, I've read way too much into this, but there's a guy that kind of ran Chewies.com, right, sold that business and basically came on to GameStop, and they actually looked like there was an opportunity to kind of turn that around, because, like, basically GameStop was a kind of brick and mortar kind of business. This guy came on and said, no, look, this has actually got some really good, say, fundamentals to the business, but we got to move into the digital. We think we can do this. And so there were people that were kind of saying, keep an eye on GameStop, that were not just the Redditors, right? And so, you know, you had this kind of, like, basically this community, this discussion about, was GameStop going? People were starting to buy this ahead of time. It was when they saw this going in, they knew what happened. Right, because that is exactly, and I bring up Toys R Us because Toys R Us is the perfect example of this. You had a profitable store that was kind of iconic in many kind of states, especially millennials. It was for me too. I mean, I grew up, like, hearing about, you know, with the birth of Toys R Us, that, you know, when Toys R Us came and put out the business of local toy stores, right? But then Toys R Us came up, and that was the toy store, right? That's where you kind of, you want Christmas presents, and you would get to go to this toy store, and there's all this stuff going on, and then that was, like, just disassembled by these hedge funds, sold off in pieces for profit, and then put out of business, right? And so, you know, you have these kind of culturally iconic places that that are being victimized, and these people are just like, screw that. These people, they're watching it, right? You've been watching what's been happening over the past several years, right? And you're watching basically these people just making hand over fist money, and everyone else is getting screwed. And these folks were like, we can do it too. Matter of fact, we think we can do it better than you, right? And now we're going to sink you bastards because you took it one step too far. And they did.
So I wonder, like, what the policy reaction is going to be out of this. Because, you know, once you steal from the rich.
Totally.
Then, like, you know, we're going to have a complete overreaction.
Absolutely.
But, like, I mean, like, this is where we have to be pushing for a wealth tax. And this is an excellent opportunity to, like, go after the income inequality that's been happening. I mean, billionaires have fucking profited through the roof during this pandemic.
Absolutely.
Like, I mean, this pandemic might be one of the largest transfers of wealth in like the world's history. Like, simply because of everyone being dependent on, like, Instacart and Amazon and other organizations, because we have to work with the hegemons right now.
Yep.
Like, and those are the ones who are getting rich out of this. And it's time to take the fucking spoils back.
Absolutely. 100%. I mean, this is where both the wealth tax, right, and what you brought up before, the Robin Hood tax, which is, you know, I mean, I think because that stops or kind of greatly puts the brakes on these kind of micro trades, right? This kind of, like, rapid computer AI generated trading systems, right? And then you start to push back a little bit about that. And again, does that solve the overall arching problems? And no, but it certainly freaking slows down the destruction. Right. And basically begins to be able to start to do some kind of really redistributive programs, right, which are designed it. You know, and it's interesting enough, right, if the timing of this happening now, at the same time that you've got now pushes like the Biden administration for like $15 an hour minimum wage, you know, frankly, I'd be like, you know, okay, this is the time to, you got the wealth tax. Here's the, you know, minimum wage. And I want childcare, and I want free college tuition, and I want the forgiveness of student loan debt. And it's going to come from those fuckers, right, who've been destroying our economy now, right, for the past several decades. Right.
Yeah.
And the anger is appropriate. Now, one of the things that, you know, I'm always, like, a little cautious on is, like, let's be clear about who these folks are that are doing these trades. There are some people, like, on the left who've got a clear ideology. Like, they're literally talking about eating the rich, right? And one of my favorite things, like, one of my pieces of sound or kind of things from TikTok was this woman. She's trading, and, like, her boyfriend's like, hey, what are you doing? Right? She's like, eating the rich. she's like, the only question now is if I still get dipping sauces. Right. And then you've got, you know, and then you actually, there's interesting. You see some of these Gen Z folks, right? Gen Z, millennials, Gen Z folks on TikTok and some of the other social media platforms using this as an opportunity to basically say, hey, you know what? It's not just here. right? And using it as an organizing opportunity to begin to think about it. Because, you know, a lot of these folks that are doing these trades, they're not lefties, right? I mean, this is why you saw, like, when Robinhood, right? Not the Robinhood tax, but Robinhood, the trading platform, which is supposed to be, like, you know, the hip version of the trading platform, when they basically, like, prevented and stopped these kind of retail traders, everyday traders.
A lot of these people are, like, libertarians, like, or probably, like, right or conservative leaning, like,
and some of them are absolute shitholes.
Right? Yeah.
I mean, like, come on, let's be honest.
No, I mean, it's definitely like like, here you brought up Gen Z and all, but, like, I remember what it was like growing up in the 90s, like pre 9/11, you know, when my dad had a factory job, you know, had a union. And, like, lived through, like, that experience of my dad losing his union job and having his union get busted and what the detrimental effects it had on our family. And, like, it's more than two decades later, my family's still reeling from that. Like, I don't think my parents have matched the income combined working together that my dad was making back in the 90s.
Exactly.
Like, so there's millennials have been feeling that, right, for decades now. And Gen Z, like, have never lived in an economy like with that experience. Like, they've just lived from disaster to disaster. And I mean, like, at some point, like, the shit's just gonna hit the fan.
Totally.
Like, you have my generation, which was the last generation to see that, like, stuff being taken away, or the first generation of that stuff just being taken away from us drastically. Maybe like a little bit of Gen X, but, like, I feel,
dude,
like my generation.
I'm telling you, this is the trajectory of it. My generation, we were the last generation that actually saw the working factories in our towns and then watched them being closed down. Right? We were the ones that were saying, watch the manufacturing base of this country. My hometown of Utica, New York, was a perfect example of this. Right? Watch the entire manufacturing base kind of be like wither away, and people just buy the hundreds. Losing their jobs, right? You guys were kind of like the last, like, okay, after that first wave went through, right? Millennials come in. It's like, okay, the economy's already in tailspin. We're going to watch the freaking, like, the economy collapse. And, like, you know, your livelihood, what does it look like? Well, yeah, you get a job in the service sector.
Yeah.
Right? You get, like, a job at freaking minimum wage jobs because the union jobs are already gone, right? And the few that are left, now exactly what you said, you're watching them stripped away.
I mean, yeah, and then it's also, like, you know, I was thinking about this, my credit score went up dramatically simply because of, like, getting a raise with work.
Exactly.
Like, I mean, like, your credit is based on how poor you are.
Exactly.
Like, if you're – and it's just, like, you know, like that stuff, it's like, you know, like, working – the job I'm in now is, like, the second job I've ever had not working in a retailer or a bar or a restaurant. Right. And I've been here for 3 years, and it's just, like, you know, it took me till, like, almost 30 to get to this point. It's just like, no, burn the shit down. I mean, like it's amazing where, you know, we talk about this with the primaries and stuff like this. Like, this is why my generation and Gen Z's came out strong for Sanders over the past two terms.
100%.
Yeah. Like, we don't have, like, the material goods like to fucking live on. And we're, you know, shackled with student debt. You know, like, all this other bullshit, like, it's just fucking insane. And no, fucking fuck the rich at this point. Like, it's time to start taking their money.
Well, and that's the, you know, I do think, you know, basically we saw after that Robinhood app basically stopped the trading on, say, on GameStop, on AMC movie theaters, on Nokia, on kind of some other ones, like the BBB, whatever it was. BlackBerry, that's right. They stopped trading just on those. And they didn't stop – I'm sorry. They didn't stop trading. They stopped buying on it. So you could sell all you wanted to drive down the price back down, but you couldn't buy on it, right? Which now there's a couple lawsuits that are already being filed about market manipulation and that kind of stuff. But when that happened, to have AOC, right, and some figures on more on the libertarian bending on the right, like, all come out and saying this has got to stop, calling for hearings, all this stuff, holding these people accountable for what they did, that's awesome. And what that points to is the struggle over what you do with a situation where there is so much anger and frustration and pent up and, like, just like decades now of feeling like you're shit and feeling like that, yeah, you're never going to get anywhere. And that the only thing that you're being told to do is work harder, get your side hustle going, and then maybe you'll be able to put ends meet. But really, you know, deep down inside that it's all a freaking sham, right? That's the organizing energy right now, right? That's where we have to go. This is what Raymond Williams, you've heard me talk about this in other contacts, Raymond Williams called the structure of feeling, this emergent feeling, the emergent structure of feeling that people are feeling it. Now it's the political organizing task now is to what we do with it. What you just described with Bernie Sanders, a perfect example, is that he spoke with the proposals that he spoke to, the plainness which he spoke to, the consistency which he spoke to that. It said, we're going to put names on things and we're going to propose things that are actually going to respond to that feeling of a really material hurting that is going on. And right now, like, the question is that who's going to take the initiative? Is it going to be the libertarians who are going to say, yeah, everybody should be able to kind of be a shithole on Wall Street, not just the hedge funders, right?
Are the fascists going to take it over?
Are the fascists going to take it over? Or is the left going to take it over? Because let's be real here. The center of the political spectrum's got nothing, right? They don't have, they've got tweaks and they've got kind of like, oh, we can do some good things and we could talk to each other nicely. Right. And I'm saying that I've been very, very happy with what we're seeing so far in the Biden administration in terms of like the aggressiveness by which they've been pursuing some of these executive actions. Although it has to be said, most of those executive actions are only rolling back what Trump did. Right. Not taking it a step further where it needs to go. So some of that is different. Right. I totally get that. And I'm 100% behind that. We have what I'm hearing so far on the proposals that are coming out. There's a lot of good stuff there. But to talk about, to speak to people's like conditions and actually propose big, bold solutions and transformations where we got to be. And it's going to be a struggle for the next decade over who takes that initiative. Right. And I'm saying thank God for the organizing that's been going on for the past 4 or 5 years. Because we've been seeing what we can do when that happens. So taking that again, this is a perfect example. Because the third thing, or the fourth kind of like version of this, is that nobody takes the initiative. And it's just fucking pitchforks.
I mean, like, and I mean, I think we're seeing it locally. Malcolm Kenyatta.
Oh.
Like bringing, like, Nikhil Saval. Like, we have a generation of younger Democrats.
Totally. 100%.
Coming in into the state right now where, like, and you get it, right? Malcolm Kenyatta came out early for Hillary Clinton, came out early for Joe Biden, but, you know, and making those moves politically, but he is probably one of the best speakers on these issues within the House right now. You know, we have Summer Lee, we have Sarah Namorado, we have all of them who are doing great work. We have Rick Kuchinski. We have like the 2020 and 2018 classes of the Democrats are a completely different shift in that political reality than those who came in 2016 and 2014 and 2012 and 2010, like out of the younger Democrats that are in there. I mean, Chris Rapp started that in 16, getting in,
yep,
beating the machine in the primary. But like that, you know, like, you know, this week, Rick Kuchinski, we have the budget coming up on Tuesday. Rick Kuchinski, Nikhil Saval, and Elizabeth Fiedler and others are going to be introducing their they're producing their people's budget. They're going to be putting out a people's budget, a working people's budget. You know, like, yeah, like when have the Democrats have gone against the governor's budget and put, no, exactly. No, we're proposing our own budget and we're putting it out there.
Right. Exactly.
And this is what we want.
And like this,
this is the stuff we haven't seen within.
Exactly. I was going to say, yep.
Like the Republicans have been doing this every budget address, you know, for the past 6 years, saying what they want. But Democrats have never, no, we want more.
Yep.
You know,
exactly. This is the idea. You know, you stop the negotiating with yourself, right? You basically start with what you want, right? And then you push it, right? Because, you know, again, I'm telling you, that I believe with my full being that is the only way out of where we're at right now. That the boldness has to happen now. Otherwise, you know, I don't even want to get into it right now because I think. There's a lot of dark roads that are ahead. And some of those dark roads are kind of things what we saw at the Capitol. The other dark roads are more like more depression, more struggle, more, you know, circles under your eyes, right? That slow,
more years like 2020.
But and I mean like the slow death, right? The death of one's freaking soul, the rot at the core, and that is should be as concerning as what we saw at the Capitol here. It's the bold solutions now, or we're, you know, look, I don't want to say we're freaking screwed, but I'm really close to saying that if we don't. A couple things before we got to move. Like I said, we got to move on a little bit today. We both got some hard outs. One, if you haven't seen this story about New York Governor, Governor Cuomo, basically underreporting nursing home deaths by as much as 50%, you definitely should check out the story. The link will be in the show notes today. This is something that Sam Cedar, the Majority Report, had flagged a while back. They've been talking about this. Obviously, you're in New York. They're in New York, so they're going to see this a little bit more. You know, I know Cuomo got a lot of kind of good props right at the beginning, but what's becoming clear here is part of that, those good props that he got for his leadership on the issue had to do with the fact that he was hiding deaths, right? He did it for political gain. I can't prove that at this point, right? And the reporting doesn't bear that out quite here, but again, that's what everything seems to be pointing to. One thing that you got to have on, and I know that, you know, we got Brian's listeners to hear too. One of the things they asked that I'm going to give to Brian, right? He's going to get this in the mail over the weekend, right? Right now, is that to maybe come on and talk about what's actually happening in Iowa, what's happening in Florida, what's happening in higher ed right now, as some more, another round of devastation is being wrought kind of across the country. In Iowa right now, they're looking to eliminate tenure at all Iowa State universities. And this would be the first such bill in the nation. And every indication is that if that passes, that it is going to be passed on just like other information. Also, the situation down in Florida is also insane, what's going on there. But we'll get into that another time because I just, like I said, we don't have a ton of time for here. And it's going to take a little time to unpack that. But look ahead for that on some Out the Coop Live and some future shows about what's happening now in higher ed. I think we got to close the first section out today. Just talk about Marjorie Taylor Greene, man. It's just.
Did you hear about the other conspiracy theory she got wrapped up in last night?
With the laser beams?
The laser beams, yes. So, like,
wait. So, I'm sorry. I missed it. The Jewish laser beams that started the wildfires.
Yeah, so,
there.
This is a conspiracy theory that I've heard leak out from moderate staffers within the House Republicans.
Are you serious?
For the past few years. Yo, absolutely. Like, there are people within there are staffers in the Republican caucus in the House that absolutely believe it. Like, the forest fires and everything are happening across the country are like from laser beams by George Soros. Like, there are
you
like
freaking,
this is
you're,
not
you're, seriously.
I'm fucking dead serious. Yes, dead 100% serious. Wow. There are staffers who like don't want to be seen talking to us, who will talk to us on the side about this shit, about how fucking nuts their coworkers are. Like, as soon as I saw this story, I like, yeah, like this is the conspiracy theory. Like,
I know that. I've heard
I know absolutely what she was. I know absolutely what you what that conspiracy theory was talking about. Like, and like this is like the dangerous stuff. Like, I've had hard conversations with my mom over the past few weeks. Like, because she mentioned like, what does Soros mean? What does this mean? I had to explain to her, like, lay down like hours long conversation of like, okay, so like we're talking about the Elders of Zion and how that spawned massive like massive conspiracies and anti-Semitic attacks in the 1900s going up through the Holocaust. Like, and I had to explain to her what they meant by Soros and how that is just basically saying another Jew banker like running the world, like Elders of Zion. Like this is what these people believe. Like, this is 100%, like, this is not just, like, QAnon stuff. This is stuff that's been going on for a few years now.
Jesus.
Like, Christ. This is only just coming to the mainstream now because of Marjorie Taylor Greene. But, like, this stuff, this is dangerous. These fucking conspiracy theories are beyond dangerous. Like, this is, like, stuff that, like, leads to ethnic cleansing.
Totally.
Like, that we're hearing. Like, well, this,
especially when it's not challenged, right? I mean, especially when it's allowed to just percolate and it's allowed to be there unchallenged. Because, like, this is where...
This has been bubbling for a few... This has been bubbling for years now. And I had to talk to my mom, like, what these conspiracy theories are, what they mean by, like, the Rothschilds, like, QAnon. Because she's, like... Well, like, because she's been watching... She's a lot more politically aware now since, you know, I've been telling her for months that Trump is trying to steal this election and watch what's going to happen. Like, and once the attack happened, I think she pretty much is on board. Like, wow, what Sean's been saying for the past 5 months actually, like, fucking happened. Like, telling her how fucking crazy these people are. like, I know we've had these hard conversations, like, over the past, like, several weeks about, like, QAnon, like, who George Soros is and how it's an anti-Semitic trope and what they believe in. And, like, no, it's, like, that's the, like, they don't like it because it's the billionaire that funds Democrats while they have all the billionaires that fund them. Like, it's, like... Yeah, no, I mean, like, we have to really, like, push back on this stuff.
Well, and this is where when you see that, you know, you see that, the move by, I think his guy's name is Gonzalez, right, from California, introduced that legislation to basically kind of say, we need to remove her, right? She needs to be taken out of the House and kind of removed from office. And I really do think, I don't think there's any saving these people, right? I mean, I think they're gone.
I mean, this is what Scott Perry believes.
Well, and he's gone. Like, this is why he needs to resign. Or he needs to be forced out. Like, I mean, this is
mainstream within the Republican Party. Like, these conspiracy theories are 100% like mainstream within the Republican Party. I'm sorry, but I've been like following these reopened Facebook groups for the past several months. You know, following the Mastriano stuff. Like, this isn't just like a small sect of people. This is a virus that is like infecting the whole entire party.
Check this out. Cori Bush just tweeted this out, right? This like literally 6 minutes ago. A maskless Marjorie Taylor Greene and her staff berated me in a hallway. She targeted me and others on social media. I'm moving my office away from hers for my team's safety. I've called for the expulsion of members who've incited the insurrection from day one. Then bring, this is the House Res 25 to a vote. So there you go. Right there, right? Going right after Cori Bush. Damn.
Yeah, I mean, like, this is what the fucking Republicans believe. This is not like this. Sorry, this isn't just Marjorie Taylor Greene. This is like a plurality of the party, or a sizable minority of the party. This isn't just like, this is like 30 or 40% of the fucking party at this point.
Well, this is why. Okay, now see, you're emphasizing. So one of the people, again, I'm not. I'll let you know when it comes out, when I can confirm it. One of the people that I want to have on the show is it's a guy, he's a pastor actually, who does a lot of work, really progressive dude. And I keep him coming back, and I keep him coming back when I have him on the show, because his perspective is so, is on the line. I think he's got some insights into a lot of this kind of stuff, because I think we're going to have to really think about how we handle this stuff, because there's just no way. I mean, we can't allow these people continue on this stuff. I mean, they're operating based upon just fantasy, and it's fantasy with very real consequences, as we've been seeing.
Yeah.
So I don't know. Anyways, we should take a quick break, and we'll come back after this with more of the insanity right here in Pennsylvania. This is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken. I want to remind you that you can become a patron for as little as $5 a month by going to patreon.com/rcpress, or you can drop some, drop a little cash in our tip jar right now by going to paypal.me/rcpress. We'll be back right after this break with what's going on here a little bit more locally to home. This is Kevin Mahoney. Be right back.
I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in Two. On this day in labor history, the year was 1912. That was the day striking worker Anna Lopiazzo was shot and killed by local police during the pivotal Bread and Roses strike in Lawrence, Massachusetts. In what is considered one of the most important strikes in American labor history, the industrial workers of the world had organized a strike that brought out more than 30,000 textile mill workers at the American Woolen Company. Workers had been on strike for most of the month, picketing, marching, giving speeches, and stopping scabs. Their banners demanded a living wage and dignity, bread and roses. That day, there were workers' parades among pitched battles between strikers, police, and scabs. Gunfire erupted. According to Big Bill Haywood, 19 witnesses saw police officer Oscar Benoit shoot Anna Lopiazzo. The shooting provided the mill owners with an opportunity to crack down on the strike. Martial law was instituted, and all public meetings and marches were banned. The leading IWW strike organizers, John Edor and Arturo Arturo Giovanetti were arrested for her murder, despite the fact that they were 2 miles away from the scene. Though they were eventually acquitted, their imprisonment removed them from directing the day-to-day work of the strike. But who was Anna Lopiazzo? According to Bruce Watson, author of Bread and Roses, Mills, Migrants, and the Struggle for the American Dream, if America had a Tomb of the Unknown Immigrant paying tribute to the millions of immigrants known only to God and distant cousins compiling family trees, Anna Lopiazzo would be a prime candidate to lie in it. And indeed she was for 88 years, until retired IBEW 2321 business manager David Morris worked to get a headstone decorated with the Bread and Roses symbol of grain stalks and a rose for her pauper's grave. Labor History in 2, brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and The Rick Smith Show.
Welcome back, Raging Chickens, Out the Coop podcast. Yes, we're here a little closer to home, and it's been pretty crazy. It's been pretty crazy what's going on. You know, once again,
it's only been a week since Scott Perry tried to coup. that was reported.
Well, now he's got his mug right on the kind of right in kind of the main pages of the New York Times as kind of one of the leading factions of the kind of PA nut jobs that are kind of, you know, going to go down with the ship with Trump, doubling down on the kind of the Trump brand in Pennsylvania. I really do feel like that, you know, the national media is finally waking up to what the hell's going on in Pennsylvania and how freaking insane it is here.
Yeah, so like one of the things I want to talk about, you know, we didn't put this in the notes, but this talks about Scott Perry is the accountability work that constituents have been driving right here in the PA-10.
Totally.
They've been contacting all of Perry's corporate donors over the past week. I think they got $100,000 worth of donations to pull out of
him.
Wow. Which is a huge milestone. You know, they say they'll suspend committed to suspend their donations and to review their donations. So, like, people have been flooding they've created scripts. They've created certain text language, messaging language to email these people with. There are Google documents, spreadsheets going around with all these political directors. So there is a massive accountability push here in Pennsylvania. In central PA, there's also going to be, there's protests and all. I won't be surprised if this is a national story, the accountability efforts against Scott Perry within the coming days or weeks.
Well, I would, especially when, go ahead.
There's a big constituent driven thing. We're talking about recruiting candidates now for 2022. We're talking about starting PACs, our own PACs to give money to that will support the primary winner. So yeah, I mean, like there's a lot of things that's happening right here and on the ground real quickly with Scott Perry.
Well, this is how the New York Times, I just wanted to just like three quick paragraphs about how the story is set up. So you get a sense of how like people are starting to put the pieces together, right? Which we've been talking about here for a while, but here is it. Perhaps no state has demonstrated its fealty and as tenaciously as Pennsylvania, where Republican officials have gone to extraordinary lengths to keep Trumpism at the center of their message as they bolster the president's false claims of a stolen election. 8 of 9 Republicans in Pennsylvania's congressional delegation voted to throw out their state's own electoral votes for President Biden on January 6, just hours after a mob had stormed the Capitol. A majority of Republicans in the state legislature had endorsed that effort. And one House member from the state, Scott Perry, was instrumental in promoting a plan in which Mr. Trump would fire the acting attorney general in an effort to stay in office. So if we can thank Scott Perry for anything here, it's that action on part, what he did with the attorney general, I think kind of just like, you know, turned on all the lights. People are like, oh, wait a minute. It's not just this kind of like, you know, because I, you know, frankly, I do think there's a bias like in the national media when it comes to like Pennsylvania and a lot of other Midwestern states say, these are kind of, you know, say backwater areas, especially ones for the kind of center of the state.
You know, it's been funny. Roxbury and I have been talking about this for years now. This is Roxbury's. This is his official position. I could speak on his behalf right now, but he's always said Pennsylvania is the most important state electorally in the country. Like everything goes through Pennsylvania. And he says State Street is the most important street in the country. Mm-hmm. Just because of all the lobbyists, the lobbying groups, the Commonwealth Foundation being right there. But like, he definitely has a point. Like we've been saying this for years, how fucking nuts the Republican Party in this country, in this state has been. It's pretty much like we've been saying this since day one of the Raging Chicken.
Dude, like, exactly. Like, you remember this talking about
this
talking
is like
about
10
Tom
years
Corbett.
Now.
Exactly. When we launched in part because of the actions that were going on after the Wisconsin uprising and after we saw this kind of insanity of like the Alex Spider like a legislation and this kind of right wing playbook that was going across. We're like, holy crap, this is going on and it's coming to Pennsylvania. And one of the things that we remarked early on in our coverage of what was going on is like, we found it. Do you remember this? It was like, we were talking about, it was like, it's kind of strange that in all this reporting, right, Pennsylvania continues to fly under the radar, right? Because Tom Corbett wasn't as like as crazy and as out there.
Tom Corbett was just incompetent. And you still had Republicans like Pelleggi. You still had moderate Republicans in key positions of power within the Senate and Republican caucus that stopped the stuff. And really, like, I mean, Jeff Hayes poisoned, or not Jeff Hayes, sorry, it's my county commissioner. I just got a story on his wife. Penn Live finally reported on his wife being there at the insurrection. So
nice.
We've had Scott Wagner, really drive this in the Senate and taking people out and replacing them with like Mike Regan, you know, the gerrymandered maps of 2010. This is all a result of that.
Exactly.
You've had, a moderate Republican, or not moderate, but a conservative institutionalist in Stan Smith resigning because of him getting primaried by Chris Dush and then Dush taking over his seat the following cycle. He left because, and now Dush is in the Senate, and Dush is the person who wanted to impeach the Supreme Court justices and wanted to, push the judicial gerrymandering that's going on. Like, these people have taken over the party because of the gerrymandering. They've only gotten more conservative and more crazy over the past several years, and they've taken out, or they've kneecapped, and they also they've kneecapped key Republicans in positions of power, right? I mean, if you're the House Speaker, you come within 3% of losing your seat in a primary, you're not surviving the next round,
right?
And that's what ended up happening. Like, and that's how Dush got in. And then you've also had Republicans like Mike Terzai. For years, enable these people. Someone posted a question, would Mike Terzai have signed the fucking letters with Trump, or would he push back against the caucus? No, he would have. He fucking enabled these people for the past decade. Of course he would have, like, supported this stuff. Like, you know what I mean? Like, yep. Get the fuck out of here with that. Like, Jake Corman has absolutely no control over his Senate caucus leadership. Scarnati, he kept an iron grip on things, but he too would have went along with Trump's coup attempt.
Yep.
I'll
tell you one of the projects that I've been beginning to reassemble. I thought about this a couple years ago, and then I just put it on the back burner. But as I'm watching this all come to fruition again, is that I've been thinking about a book project, right? That is going to be based upon reporting from Raging Chicken, right? So I mean, in particular, I was thinking, everything, I can't tell you how many requests I get from people that are faculty members in the state system of higher education, for example, that ask me for references, because I keep on saying, this is what I've been talking about. They're like, well, do you have links to that? And I send them all these links. And then I'm thinking, like, this story has got to be told, right? Right here from Pennsylvania. Because, like, look, the reporting's already been done. I mean, I did that work, right? And then it got me thinking again. Now you got me thinking. It's like, maybe we should even make that broader, making like two little things, right? One is based upon the kind of stuff that you've been following. It's one of the things, the stuff that I've been following, as kind of little primers. Basically, this is the kind of shit that's going on, right? And we need to know this history because this stuff didn't come out of nowhere. That's a little bit of a sidetrack. I'm sorry about that, but this is the kind of stuff that it just makes me think, like, how important it is to understand that this stuff has been with us now for a long time. These are not just like one or two individuals that we just need to get rid of those individuals. You need to freaking end the party as we know it.
Mastriano is now like the leader of the party.
Exactly. What more do you need to know?
And there's no accountability coming from Republicans towards the Republicans who, like, we saw in some states like Georgia. You know, like, obviously they're going forward with their voter suppression agenda, but like, they held their representatives, the Republicans, to account who spread misinformation. While in Pennsylvania, right, like, Jake Corman's doing nothing about Mastriano. And like Seth Grove, who spread massive amount of conspiracy theories about Dominion voting machines and other things after the election, he got rewarded with a House seat, a House State Government Committee seat, the chair of the House State Government Committee, which, you know, is where the voter suppression efforts in this state's going to come from.
Right.
Comes from his office. You know, like, these people are being rewarded for their insurrection and their misdeeds. So, and, you know, I guess this goes right into the next point.
Yeah.
On our thing with this week, we published an op-ed. Eric put together an op-ed about Jeffrey Yass, who is a billionaire hedge funder from the Susquehanna Banking Institute, or Susquehanna Bank, SBI. Out in Philadelphia, he has a, we've been talking about this guy for years. You know, he has these PACs called Students First, which is a, which, you know, he's been dumping, influencing Pennsylvania politics during this whole entire fucking time, like that we've, for the last 10 years. And Yass donated $9 million last year to PACs associated with the Commonwealth Foundation. And then, like, there's a Children's Choice Fund, and then there's the Leaders, the Commonwealth Leaders Fund, right? He donated millions of dollars to them. Those moneys are passed through to, for him, money for that money going to Pennsylvania's insurrectionists. Like the Leaders Fund and the Children's Choice Fund spent $500,000 getting Dutch elected to the Senate in his primary last year, like taking over Scarnati's seat, right? You know, Dutch, we just said, you know, these two PACs gave $25,000 to Mastriano over the past 2 years. And like, we have important judicial races coming up this year, and they got another $9 million after the election. So they're already thinking about 2021, going after the Supreme Court seats, going after these judges that are running, and then going after, like, these people are funding the insurrection and solidifying it, you know, and fortifying the insurrection and enabling these people to go even crazier.
Absolutely. And this, they are doing real damage.
Yeah. Real damage. Jeffrey Yass is our billionaire that is fucking things up in this state. And I would definitely recommend reading the op-ed that Eric published in the Capital Star. It's 100% worth reading.
We've got the link right there in the show notes. So you
had Mysic reach out to me last night, just explaining how fucking viral that article went. So please, it's definitely worth reading and looking at.
I'm going to drop this in our YouTube channel right now. So if anybody wants to check it out, you can do it. Cool, man. So definitely that op-ed, I haven't read the whole thing at this point. You just told me about it this morning. And I'm like, man, I just was scanning through at the beginning of the show. This is fantastic. And look, you know, this kind of explanatory stuff in with context and with purpose has got to be out there now, because like I said, this is, you know, we're saying that this is, we're in this kind of fight. and we're in it right here in Pennsylvania. We're here. It's like, there's no, there are very few other places that are more central.
They're pushing right now.
Oh, Jesus.
Like Malcolm Kenyatta, like they're going to go after the governors. The Republicans are holding a constitutional convention right now at the beginning of this session. They're not calling it that. I think they've passed like four or five constitutional amendments. A few of them are going to get on the primary ballot. The judicial gerrymandering is probably going to get on the November ballot. I mean, they're doing real damage to our Constitution right now that will affect this state for decades.
Yep.
Basically enabling themselves permanent control of the legislature. Going after Governor Wolf's, the governor's emergency orders that goes from 90 days to 21 days, and that the legislature can go after an emergency order by a simple vote of a resolution in the House and Senate to declare that emergency over. Basically saying, like, you know, making the pandemic worse. You know, that's basically what they want to do with this. No, like, they're solidifying the fascist movements and the forces that have risen up during this and really embracing it, and they're doing it through this legislative process.
Freaking crazy. I mean, this is like, you know, I don't know.
This is the Koch brothers destroying the Pennsylvania. Like, we're watching it right now.
Yeah.
Like,
I mean, exactly.
I mean, if they're successful in gerrymandering the Supreme Court and, you know, winning that ballot initiative in the fall, which when most likely will come up, they will be able to drill themselves into permanent power by redistricting the state's appellate courts and the Supreme Court for decades. Permanent minority control for decades. You know, Democrats get hundreds of thousands of more votes as an aggregate when the elections come around, but Republicans are retaining large majorities because of the gerrymandering. And this attack on the Supreme Court will make sure they remain in control for decades. This
crazy.
Is it. This is happening right now.
This is, I mean, this is like, this is the next, like, this is the next play, right?
This like, should... this is, and they're going to be using the courts to destroy labor.
Exactly. Exactly. Exactly.
Like, we're only talking about gerrymandering right now, but like, this is them going after using the courts to, you know, the Republicans, you know, they're not, these right wing groups aren't able to legislative get their things done, their agendas done. So they're doing it by attacking the state constitution and they're doing it by attacking the courts. And once they control the courts with this stuff, they're going to use this to destroy the unions in the state, destroy anything with the public sector, like making it worse for working people. This is their long-term goal.
Absolutely.
Like, this isn't just about gerrymandering. This is gerrymandering, but this is...
No, it's about power. This everything is about, like, establishing minority rule permanently.
Yeah.
That's the agenda here.
And attacking and defanging the left.
And which is one of the things you need to do in order to maintain minority rule power.
And this is what Grover Norquist said after Wisconsin. We have to destroy the unions in order to destroy the left.
Absolutely.
And destroy the public sector and destroy anything involving public goods, destroy the left.
Yep.
This isn't about governing. This is about destroying their political opponents.
Yep, exactly. 100%. Well, very good. Very good that we're...
I know I'm being all happy and...
No, I know. It's like, I was like, man, I was in a freaking good mood today. I'm going to go back watch like GameStop TikTok for a while. I'm going to be happy again. Oh, man. But, well, I mean, I guess, you know, we are seeing these different kind of moves. And I think that, you know, what's going on with ITF, I mean, WITF, I mean, it's like you get to see at least there's some kind of pushback. I thought that was pretty freaking amazing.
Yeah, I hope other news outlets follow this lead. Basically, they will peg any role that Republicans have played in the insurrection to them while they are reporting on them in the future. By basically saying, this senator who signed onto this letter or agreed with this lawsuit did this.
Right.
Without any founding and evidence or base, you know. So
right, and why I think that's so important is this: is it because it's basically
like
what it is?
It's
like saying like as a mantra: we will not forget, we will not forget, we will not forget, right? And being insistent that we will not let this kind of like disappear into the kind of like whatever, you know, the void that is social media or something like this. But that we're actually going to say no. We're going to remember this point in our history, and it's a way of kind of underscoring, right? And putting kind of like, you know, the flag in there saying this was a momentous moment in the history of this country. The first time since the, you know, the Capitol was like was breached by insurrectionists since the British in the War of 1812. I mean, come on.
Yeah.
I mean, this is I mean, our grandkids are going to be talking about this stuff. Crazy.
I know. I mean, it's working on the front lines combating this stuff is pretty like not amazing, but you know, like, I mean, this is where we're at,
right?
didn't think this is where we would be after you know, Scott Wagner flipped out underneath the billboard in 2018. Like, Jesus. It's just been insane the past this, and it's not slowing down either.
No,
the insanity is staying here.
That is for sure. All right. Well, one thing I just wanted to just, this is, you know,
another
one of these,
good news.
Yeah. Another good news. Right. There's actually more, but there's more on this. We're not going to do that. I'm not going to go down that hole right now because there's so much that I could say right now about what's going on with the testing regime. Let me put it this way, is that or the vaccination rollout. There's like the official, like there's a plan. There is a plan. But on the ground, I can tell you that I run into people, not run into them, but people I talk to, like neighbors, right? Other folks that I know from around the area. It's like a free-for-all with vaccines right now, right?
Did you see the Philly fighting COVID story?
I did. I didn't read it, though. I saw it come up on a headline. What was the deal?
Oh, my God. It's a huge fucking scandal in Philadelphia about COVID vaccinations.
Yeah.
Basically, the
that was
the
an
city,
organization, an outside organization that was brought
ran
in.
Ran by a 22-year-old with no experience in public health. Started to pop up almost like the fire festival of vaccinations here in Philadelphia. 22-year-old scam artist, grifter, CEO, started this. He's a grad student from Drexel, started this company called Philly Fighting COVID, nonprofit. They basically changed their status to a for-profit motivation and saw themselves as getting rich off of the vaccines and exploiting that loophole, you know, set up a C4 in order to make money off of this. Yeah, he got caught stealing vaccines, taking them, distributing them personally to his friends. Like, this whole entire this deserves a Pulitzer Prize winning. This is a Pulitzer Prize winning story, in my opinion, that's been going on. WHYY and Billy Penn first reported on it.
Right, exactly.
The Inquirer has been picking up, but like they've been driving a lot of this. And like, I mean, given the moment that we're in, this is almost this deserves to be looked at for a Pulitzer Prize. Well, like that's like how fucked up it is. You know, we have private healthcare companies distributing a vaccine. We have no public healthcare infrastructure to do this after years of privatization and defunding public health in this country. You know, it really just shows you why we need to like take the private sector out of healthcare.
100%. Yeah,
once
totally,
and for all.
Totally. Totally.
Like,
what are you saying? Force the vote? Just kidding.
No, I mean, but we have to like we have to start fighting.
Exactly.
Like, and no, this is where the pushback needs to be. Like this isn't a failure from government. It is. But the real failure is on the fact that government has allowed private sector companies and capitalism to take over the way they have over the past 30 or 40 years.
Absolutely. Well, and this is what I was going to say is like this is what you see the rollout. So I can tell you right now, right, what I know, what people are doing, right, especially kind of in Bucks County area, Lehigh Valley area, Berks County, is like you start hearing stories of people calling hospitals and saying, "Hey, do you have any vaccines?" Right, and there's been like if you are calling at the right time and say you put your name on a list, they will call you like at 3 o'clock. They'll call you like at 1 o'clock and say, "We've got extra vaccines. They expire at 3 o'clock. Can you get here?" Right? Because they don't have the vaccines, or they don't have the infrastructure that's set up to do this. They don't know how many vaccines they're getting, or they just kind of like I have fumbled the ball. And so what people are doing, right, is registering at multiple hospitals, right, to log into their kind of like to get an account in those hospitals to get put on a list. So you can be called.
It's like getting concert tickets.
It's totally
to a fucking sold out show.
Totally, it's what it is. It's what it is. I mean, Lehigh Valley. They had the Lehigh Valley Hospital, for example. They had last week or earlier this week, Sunday, I think it was. They had a mass vaccination thing, 1,000 vaccinations in Dorney Park, right in the parking lots of Dorney Park, a drive up vaccination clinic, right. So they had to put it out. They announce it. Say this is when it's going to happen. You had to sign up in 5 hours. All the appointments were gone. Right. And there were people that came anyways to try to see if they could get in and get extra vaccines. I mean, that's insane. Right. So it's like whatever that's going on. Anyways, I wasn't even going to get in all that. But so the rollout, we're going to have to talk more about this coming up, coming in the future weeks. But,
I mean, I don't know if I can blame the governor's administration on this.
No. I'm just saying this is
like a federal issue.
But it's all of the above. Right. Because it's like
it's
like
a massive systemic failure.
Well, that's exactly. And if you talk to, and I'm not even blaming the hospitals for this, right? I'm saying like, what I'm saying is that, you know, because of what happened in the federal government, right? It's messed up everything, right? There's no consistent plan. And I have to say that there's been, you know, you have all the, here's the thing. On the one hand, you're saying you got some of these hospitals that are stepping up, right? To kind of really take charge of the vaccine, like, you know, to put the, you know, some sort of plan for the vaccine rollout. right? Sometimes that gets out ahead of what's happening for the state plan. Sometimes it's coming in lieu of a state plan or a federal plan, but then there's no consistency of knowing about how many like vaccinations that they're going to get. So it's like a day by day. Hey, you get the app on your phone to get the alert. Can you get there in an hour? I mean, it's insane. I mean, this is like, this shows you what you could do in 4 years. Well, I shouldn't just put it on the Trump administration because it's like longer than that in terms of the defunding of the federal government. But in the last 4 years, or let's just the last year in terms of what's happening.
Destroying COVID, the institutions.
You destroy it and it has repercussions all down the line. And now this is why I wanted to put that flag, that story in the end here about being able to say, you know, you look at this 30-year-old bartender in Montgomery County who tested positive for that UK variant of the coronavirus. That's that super spreader one, right? It's not more deadly like the virus itself. Right. And it seems to be responding to the vaccines. However, since it spreads faster, that means more people are going to get it, means there are more hospitalizations in a shorter period of time. So which means invariably more deaths. Right. But it's not the individual virus, which is more deadly. There's another one that I want to mention at the top of the show in South Africa. It's a little bit more concerning because it seems to have some pushback against the vaccine. So we'll see about that. But, you know, so look, my point of bringing this up is this. It's awesome that the vaccine is out there. I know people now who just yesterday got their second shot, right? I'm not one of them, right? I haven't had my first shot, right? I know people who've got them, which is fantastic, right? And I'm glad for that. But the fact that the vaccine is out there doesn't mean that we just kind of like, you know, okay, we throw our masks away and all the other kind of stuff. No, we've got to be vigilant for the remainder, like of especially into the until we get to the summer, to make sure that we keep these things down, because with this strain that's coming out there, that could just freaking throw everything upside down, right? It's bad enough that we don't have enough vaccines right now. It's bad enough that we don't have a plan to do this. Please, for the love of God, swear to God, please make sure that you're masking up, keeping the social distancing, and being vigilant now to the end of this pandemic. All right, man, you got anything else before we go into today's last call?
No, nothing else. I can't wait to read this story about my county, the wife of my county commissioner, Jeff Haste, his wife, Maria Haste, attended the insurrection, took selfies of herself on the inaugural stage.
Are you serious, really?
Yes. Posted them on Facebook, which was public. Of course, screenshot them all, like, and sent them around to the media.
There you
go. After weeks of shitposting about, like, you know, why isn't Penn Live, you know, talking about Jeff Haste's wife? And I started pointing out questions. Hey, did Jeff Haste go to the thing? Stuff like that.
Nice.
So, yeah. She said, we didn't know we couldn't be there.
Okay. Okay, Santa Claus. I mean, I don't know what the hell. I mean, like, what do you, he's like, let's work in the world of fantasy or.
But I mean, like, the self snitching that happened in the weeks after, the days after, like, the fucking insurrection. Like, yep. It's just amazing. Like, people fucking snitched on themselves. Like, well, like, sorry.
But it just shows you, right? They didn't see anything wrong with what they were doing.
Yeah.
Right? Nothing at all. Nothing at all. And it's only in the aftermath they think, like, oh, wait, you're telling me I could get in trouble for doing the right thing in their minds? Whatever. All right, anyways. All right, well, this is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken. Remind you, you can become a patron and help support this podcast and everything that we do at Raging Chicken by going to patreon.com/rcpress. You can also drop us a few bucks in our tip jar by going to paypal.me/rcpress. You could leave just, you know, a couple bucks, leave $100, whatever you want to do. Just kind of throw it in there. Anything. We'll take anything. Come on. We've got a couple projects. There's a couple things that I really want to be able to do. But I'm not going to be able to do it unless we get some more folks that are stepping up and becoming patrons. It's just going to be a little bit beyond our budget. But it will kind of take this podcast and it will blast it out to kind of like many more platforms, and we'll be able to kind of be on many more channels. It's going to be up to you. So please become a patron for as little as $5 a month. Go to patreon.com/rcpress. And we'll be back right after this quick break for this week's West Coast.
This is Kev Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press. For the past 7 years, Raging Chicken Press has brought pull no punches, progressive reporting and commentary to the interwebs. Our long-form investigative pieces, stories that no access journalist wants to touch, or rollicking weekly podcasts strive to advance progressive movements and perspectives rooted in the struggles happening across the country or down the street. We've broken national stories and caused our share of discomfort in the halls of power. If we want a progressive future, we need progressive media. And you can help support Pull No Punches, homegrown progressive media today. Become a member of Raging Chicken Press for as little as $5 a month. Simply go to patreon.com/rcpress and choose your membership level. We need to make sure to keep the movement in the media and the media in the movement. Best way you can do that is to become a member of Raging Chicken today by going to patreon.com/rcpress. Thank you for your energy, your encouragement, and your support. Keep up the fight.
Ooh, sorry, a little bit late on the sound there for coming up there. My bad. This is Kim Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken. We are back after the break. Today's last call. This is another one of these weeks where I got to go kind of short on the space stuff. There's been crazy stuff going on, but we'll leave it at this one. Axiom Space, right? They have a private, you know, space tourism thing, whatever. They announced that they actually have the first crew of space tourists together. Now, there's been space tourists to the International Space Station before, right? These Russians and stuff, right? Russian billionaires and things like this. But this is it's going to be the first fully private multi-person space station crew has been introduced. And it's three men who are paying each, right, $71 million to fly on a SpaceX rocket to the International Space Station. And they will be staying there for just over a week, right? So the crew will spend 8 days at the space station. It will take 1 or 2 days to get there aboard the SpaceX Dragon capsule, following liftoff from Cape Canaveral. We are seeing it, and we're seeing what people with this kind of disposable income can do. I would love it if a couple of those folks were actually going to decide to spend some of that money shorting out some hedge funds before they went. But, you know, what are you going to do? You can wish, right? You can wish. Okay, so a couple things that I wanted to point out. So we got some free will releases this week. If you remember one of the goods, the good kind of old standbys, Cloudy with a Clance of Charcuterie. Sean always has to help me pronounce that. but it's
Charcuterie?
Yeah, there you go. What he said. All right, that's an Indian pale ale brewed with a hefty base of wheat and flaked oats plus a touch of milk sugar. Hopped hot side with Citra, then double dry hopped with Mosaic and Apollo. This is the original hazy pack with full of tropical candy-like aromatics, followed by notes of pineapple juice, grapefruit gummies, and citrus path. It comes in at 7.7% ABV. It is spectacular. It's fantastic. It's one of the kind of go-to ones. Always get a chance. Anytime I get a chance and they have it, I always pick some up. Super drinking beer, super smooth. Fantastic. They still have kind of a couple of the this past weekend. They had some of their new releases that they still have more of that, you know, if you get a chance, they've got the Longful Hunt that is a double dry hopped it's double IPA with Mosaic, Montaku, and Idaho Gem coming at 8.5 ABV. And they have the Pineapple Passion Fruit Mash, and that's their sour ale with pineapple, passion fruit, and vanilla milk sugar that comes in at 7.5 ABV. They also put a special announcement because this past weekend they had their Sour Sunday, which I think I neglected to mention last week, which I'm really bummed. Well, we didn't have the Friday show. I think that's why that threw me off. But they've got they had some special release bottles for their Sour Sunday, and now they have them in their online store. Right. Normally I focus a lot on the cans, I know, but some of the bottles that they got released look absolutely fantastic. They've got one, it's called Wild Hack. Let me see if I can get it. Oh, got it. Oh, they're not giving it me there. The one, it's called Wild Hack. Another one is Blood and Guts, which is actually one of my favorite sours that they come out of there. And the last one, I just can't read what the hell is. Let me see if I can get the store up here real quick to let you know what it is. It is there's Wild Hack. They still have their winter beer.
That one is not showing up yet. Maybe they're already sold out of that one, but it was good. The one of the things that they do have that I would strongly recommend if you're looking for just a fantastic drinking beer and you want to pick up some bottles, they have one that's called Absconded. That's their 2020 Absconded. That's a sour ale aged in oak cask with cherries. That is a mwah. So check them out. Remember, you can go to freewillbrewing.store. That's freewillbrewing.store. And if you are in Pennsylvania, if you're in Washington, D.C., or in your, was it Maryland, I think, Virginia, whatever it is, you can have Virginia, Pennsylvania, Washington, D.C. You can get free shipping on orders over $85. Or you can just have it, you know, get together with some friends, get that free shipping. But you just go to their store, freewillbrewing.store. Or you can kind of order online and do some kind of pickup at the Perksy store or in Peddler's Village. So that's all I really got. I've got a bunch of stuff I got to do, kind of kid errands and stuff this afternoon. So I didn't go heavy on the last call. I thought we had enough stuff going out in the beginning. But what do you got going on, Sean?
So that Philly fighting COVID guy,
yeah,
is now having a press conference. This tweet literally just came across the wire. And he said, this is what Max Maron put out. Philly fighting COVID CEO Andre Dorshin is taking questions from reporters. And the latest twist, he's calling for the city to replace Dr. Farley, who is the public health director. Once in the investigation in why Philly fighting COVID was let go, and alleges ouster was a political conspiracy without evidence or naming names except Farley. So this sounds like something someone would do when mounting a legal defense, you know, yep. when they're looking to go to jail. let's see. I got nothing really going on. I'm waiting for some Super Sot to come in the mail. Ordered some DeBruno Brothers from Philly.
If you don't know what that is, that's you might see it in a store called Soprasetta. But if you grew up in Utica or South Philly, you know it's Soprasetta.
Yeah. It's like saying prosciutto.
Right, prosciutto, right? Or Cabacool.
I remember you
pick up some Cabacool?
Yeah, I said prosciutto once to someone out here, and they looked at me like I had three heads on my shoulder. I was like, I'm sorry, the prosciutto.
Prosciutto and capicola.
Yeah, but.
Oh, man. Capicola. Yeah, here it is, like, Philly fighting COVID kicked out of city vaccine program. Okay, that was, I just thought there was something else came up, but it was somebody reposting a story. So
yeah, like, but yeah, definitely worth looking forward to and watching. Let's see, nothing really too else going on. My parents got me a lasagna pan. Nice. So I'm still waiting for that to come in the mail. It was a Christmas gift.
Maybe today, fingers crossed?
Not today, but probably next week at some point.
Okay.
So they ordered it. It was late by 2 months. So the order got canceled and they reordered it from Amazon. So, like, hopefully it gets mailed out. It's an Emil Henry pan, and then I'll go nice with my Le Creuset I'm waiting for.
There you go. Look at you.
Hey, I'm investing instead of, like, you know, instead of doing other vices, I'm investing in cookingware.
And Matt, I just can't wait to see all your cooking stories posted on Fleets. So that'll be great.
Yeah. And Instagram.
All right, man, I got to run. I got to get out of here. Thank you all for tuning into our show today. This is once again, Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken. And, I just got a call from Grassroots Vote. How about that? We'll see y'all next week. Don't forget, 7 p.m. on Monday, Out to Coop Live. We'll let you know what's going on. See ya!